This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
We're going to continue on to our next section here about Lindsay Clancy. That was about the fight on the internet over did she do it. Now let's go over to another portion of the arguments in Lindsay Clancy, confusion and conspiracy. We're going to be talking about another element of this specifically, which is, I'm trying to get my my notes pulled over here. As we,
I mean, pull them up. I got them. I got them.
I got them. I got them. And then it moved on me right around here. Okay. The psychosis fight. That's what we're looking at here. So let's dive into that. Okay. A lot of people speaking about it and speaking. And I think it's important when you're reading comments, just because someone says they have some sort of standing or some sort of education or some sort of backing in what they're talking about doesn't mean they actually do. And there's a lot of people grandstanding right now. And this one kind of stood out to me because it's funny what they claim to be in control of and what they claim to be an expert of. Pretty much falls apart within their first sentence. Okay, here we go. This is two posts here that were on our YouTube. It says, study psychosis. Psychosis absolutely does not surface 1 second and subsurface the next second like they're implying. Psychotics do not know the difference between reality and what is not real. So they're already conflating two different things right there. There's psychosis and psychopathy. Psychotic is not a person suffering from psychosis. So I'll throw it back into your court. How about you study it, considering you're fucking it up within the first sentence of what you're trying to argue? Why would she ask if she had a lawyer as soon as she wakes up from a coma? A true psychotic would not consider that they did something wrong because their reality conduced that they do what they did. They kind of got the Brian Koberger, let's go to the thesaurus and throw words into sentence thing going on there. You're just wrong. You're just wrong. That's all. You're just wrong on your use of the words and your assumption of what those things mean. I got nothing more for you. You're simply wrong. And then they double down in another post. I actually studied psychology at a university level. Well, I feel bad for that university. A person with psychosis doesn't rationalize regarding their hallucinary perceptions. What is this Koberger? Because there's a lot of like, let's get words in here. The person actually believes that what he hears or sees is real. Nobody can say a voice made me do it. Why didn't she listen to the real voices of the people that surrounded her continuously providing help and support? Now her biased psychologist, which was hired by Reddington, said that she didn't tell any other therapist that she heard voices telling her to harm the children except for him, and that after she murdered the children, she didn't once hear them again. Sentence structure. Suddenly, the supposed psychosis she only reported after she committed the murders is gone. How convenient. How convenient. Okay. Doctor?
It's interesting how, I mean, there's the way these things like this get a lot of play with people is because there's a few fact truths in there that are sprinkled in that say, oh, it must be, I recognize that must be true.
Yeah.
But it's sprinkled in a lot of tons of conjecture, tons of really wrong statements, inaccurate statements. And so when you put that all together in a word salad like that, it can sound authoritative. And when people like to try to be, one of the Robert Cialdini's rules of influence is authority. And so someone kind of decides, well, I have a degree in this and degree in this, I have authority, and kind of like what they're doing in the testimony right now. All right, so let's hear about your authority. Let's back it up with something. And so there's nothing here on that one. It's a word salad all over the place. Now, and some of the things they were also saying, like, when you're a psychotic break, you don't rationalize your behavior. Well, she didn't. She just described what was happening. Command hallucinations are exactly that. They're command hallucinations. As a matter of fact, According to Resnick, it wasn't just a command hallucination. It was command's action as well, you know, unable to control the voice. Now, there's a few fair points. That's why I said there's a few fair points in there. So some of the psychologists that are testified and mental health professionals also said that it was unusual for one massive episode like this to last for 22 minutes, as they said yesterday. But again, that guy is doing what right now. He's under cross-examination by Reddington. So he's kind of debunking his authority on that one. So that's what we do. Keep an open mind and keep it all in, and then it's never just one thing you're looking at. You're looking at totality of everything. And if this is one wobble for you, okay, like I'm telling you, yesterday was a little bit of a wobble for me. I thought he had some great testimony until he brought up religion. And he didn't lose it for me, but he lost it for the jury on that and a lot of people because it was completely inappropriate, got reprimanded for it, almost caused a mistrial on it. But there's a lot of data in there to go through. And again, when you have a wobble, we explore it a little bit deeper, but that's what Reddington's doing now. But that's how we interrogate information and keep in the world of maybe until the jury decides. But yeah, most of what was said in there, it's a lot of inaccuracies, tons of inaccuracies, but with a few facts sprinkled in there that makes it sound...
And that's how this case goes from like educated discussion to I heard ... and then people heard that.
I'm going to give thanks, though. I will give thanks. You know, as I said to Jen yesterday on the show, and I say to her audience that is, a lot of these people aren't our regular audience, but hey, I thank you. Thank you for making me think really, really hard on this case because we explore every avenue and it makes me really think hard. I do a ton more research than I typically do, but you make me think. So that's why interrogate the information. I'll try to prove you right, but you know what? Not even close.
Yeah. I mean, just to answer some of the points about psychosis not surfacing the way it did, every expert who addressed this says it does. They're misconstruing psychopathy and psychosis, two very different things. I won't give you a full lesson. You can find it. We did a great segment with Siobhan about it the other day.
Yeah, absolutely.
She asked for a lawyer waking up from a coma. True. Dr. Brias testified that she did, that she felt horrified. I would too. I mean, if you're coming out of that psychosis and realizing, oh my God, what the hell did I do? You would be horrified. You might be wanting to ask for an attorney because there's no way of explaining your way out of that. And you're trying to figure out what the fuck just happened to me. So that seems like a reasonable request. She didn't tell any other therapist except him. It's half right. Zeisel conceded her treatment records from September 22 to January 23. Don't document a voice, but after the killing, she described it to Patrick on February 6th, and Patrick testified to it, to Chaplain Kavanaugh, to Dr. Resnick, and to Dr. Mack, the prosecution's own rebuttal witness. Never heard them again? How convenient. Well, Zeisel did testify under cross that she hasn't heard voices since 23. She's also been under continuous psychiatric treatment and medication in Tewksbury since May of 23. Both sides have that fact. They read it a little bit differently. There you go.
So there's a few things in there. So asking for a lawyer right after. Here's what I'm going to do. That's a wobble to me. That was interesting. It's like, all right. So that, again, that's why I entertain it. It's like, all right, what kind of situation would make me want to do that? Would make her want to do that? How common is that? So that's where when I hear something like that, I dive into research. All right, how many people coming out of a situation like this that they've done a horrendous act or been accused of a horrendous act? How often do they make this as one of their first statements, one of their first concerns? And then I look at the research. Mm-hmm. I look at my own impressions. I look at research. And I say, it's actually a little more common than you thought it was, even though it stands out here because it's the first time you've ever seen it. Doesn't mean it's the first time it's ever been done. So I look at research. I look at data. I look at context, and so that's how I deal with that one. But I entertain it because you're right. I agree. When I heard that, I said, "Boy, that's a little interesting, isn't it?" But in the totality of everything that's going on, I say it's not a wobble, but definitely gave me an initial one. And as for it's interesting, and I agree. I want to caveat everything as we do every day. Not a mental health professional, not a licensed clinician or anything like that. Not pretending to be an expert in this area. Just reflecting back the things I've heard in testimony through my own experiences and things like that. I have found the whole discussion on the psychotic break of her and the postpartum psychosis very interesting as well, because there's a lot of nuances to it. It's rare, it's unusual, and because it's so rare and unusual, it's hard to study over long periods of time. But here's something interesting I found that no one's talked about yet when it comes to human behavior. a lot of the things that have been testified to, and this is based on a testify, but they haven't brought up afterward, is that the amount of stress that she was under, the feeling she had because of being overwhelmed as a mother, and the lack of sleep, not being able to get exercise, her diet, all these things, the medications that were off and on, all the things. Every single medical professional has talked about all those stressors escalating, and all those escalations were getting worse and worse and worse, that eventually led to what some of the experts, especially on defense side, were saying was the psychotic break, which happened for about 18 to 22 minutes. Again, I'm guessing at that, but that's roughly what they said during the testimony. So, and then everyone's saying, well, how come it's that one-time thing? Well, let's look at this. Remember, we just outlined, and all the medical professionals outlined, all the events that were happening in her life that led to the psychotic break, according to defense. So what happened after the psychotic break? All those stressors left. So why would she still have a psychotic break if all those things fed into the psychotic break? She's in a hospital. Her kids are gone because she killed them. And the medications have shifted. All the things that led to the break had shifted. So I would expect that to shift as well. And remember, from testimony, psychosis ebbs and flows. And this could be my hypothesis as a potentiality, but they didn't cover in testimony, so I don't know as a fact. As the fact that since, I'll ask Siobhan about it, since a lot of those stressors changed, there's a good probability that the reason why we didn't see the psychosis again afterwards is because the things that led to it were no longer there.
It got under control, basically. She was misdiagnosed. She was taking the wrong types of medication because she was prescribed the wrong types of medication for bipolar. It turns out bipolar, misdiagnosed as anxiety, generalized anxiety disorder, and depression. Those meds, you take those, which there's plenty of, and she certainly had a lot of them. You take those and your true underlying condition is bipolar, they're going to do the opposite. And one of the side effects happens to be psychosis. It's pretty clear cut. It's pretty clear cut how we got here. You manage it correctly, it can go away. People can live with bipolar and live happy, productive lives when managed correctly. But obviously all the damage was done here. She did what she did. But yes, she may be now in a better state of control. But of course it went away. It's finally being managed correctly because it took a bomb going off for someone to finally go, oh, maybe it's this.
All the stresses it had caused, it had changed.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially the lack of sleep. You know, Siobhan highlighted it, and other professionals during the testimony have highlighted that lack of sleep was the kerosene that kept fueling the fire from you know, postpartum depression to suicide, well, SIDization, and then from bipolar to bipolar two. I mean, hell, I'm learning about bipolar and bipolar two differences. I mean, I'm learning so much in this case. I mean, for the horrendousness of what we're witnessing and going through, you know, the education we're all getting on this and how important mental health is and mental health for women, especially that are dealing with postpartum issues, is tremendous. And the lack of resources, or I want to say some places I'm sure are very good, but we're seeing the highlighted, the places that are absolutely atrocious and have failed so miserably.
This is about average, if you will, and that's not good. This is another string of comments that we've been seeing kind of coming in. I'm just going to read a bunch of them off and we'll kind of go through the mistruths in them. She was non-compliant taking the medication, meaning most of the medication she got off just as soon as she started. She was building an alibi. I understand it's incomprehensible that a human being, especially a nurse mother, be that insidious, but it happens and there are people out there just like it. Lindsay knew she was doing wrong. A male entity did not possess her and make her do everything. No one's saying she was possessed. She sent her husband away. She searched various things, including Andrea Yates, getting information she needed, and an alibi. She is a sociopath. Another one. If one thinks critically, yes, the psychosis theory is disputable, called crafting an alibi, called having a cluster B personality disorder. It's emotional to claim it's indisputably temporary psychosis. And another one, believing that she searched Andrea Yates. No such search appears in any testimony of her searching Andrea Yates. Her former colleague, Margaret Hemp, testified that when she told Lindsay about the Yates case in Lindsay's first year on the unit, Lindsay had never heard of it and cried, asking how a mother could do that to her children. What she did actually search was, how can you treat a sociopath on January 20th, which prosecutors highlight, and symptoms of postpartum psychosis, hallucinations on January 19th, and intrusive on January 20th, which the defense highlights. Same phone, both sides. Non-compliant, got off the medication as soon as it started. Partly true and contested. Giolotta testified Lindsay asked to change meds nearly daily and at one point wanted to stop entirely. The defense's answer is that the drugs were making her worse. And when an infant's hospital itself recommended tapering a Seroquel. And so, there was 30 different prescriptions, 13 different meds, 30 in total different dosages of those 13 that were doled out on enough, which you just shouldn't be doing. And this is where the provider question comes in.
Because non-compliant is ridiculous.
Non-compliant is not the right word here. And also toxicity is not the right word either, because it seems it's either she didn't take them at all or they weren't to toxic levels.
And part of the reasons for it also was not just the negative effect it was having on her, but also she was trying to breastfeed and she didn't want to affect the baby. So think about this. She was not wanting to take the drugs. First of all, she feared getting addicted. So she's definitely feared of her health for being addicted to these drugs. The second
affected her sleep. That's the big thing with these drugs, is which was the fear of not being able to sleep. Yes.
And also it was affecting her being able to breastfeed, which she wanted to take care of her newborn.
Oh, Robin, remember, she hates her children and is somehow conspiring to let Patrick.
See that? That's why the only explanation, if you're going to this, is what the doctors were saying. And then also, I'm with you to the creating an alibi. So if she was creating an alibi here, here's a guarantee, it wouldn't be the first time in her life she's creating secret life and trying to create an explanation, an alibi, lying, deception, all those things create wobbles in people's lives. This wouldn't be her first rodeo doing something like that. There'd be other leakage that would have come out in the investigation. There'd be leakage from her friends, families, and colleagues. And Reddington, I guaranteed, would have saw that and done something about it and investigated someone else or something else. As well as the prosecution. Yeah. not even Reddington. Think about this. If the prosecution had any inkling of an alibi being tried to be crafted by her, it would have been presented.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
The other allegation that she's a cluster B. Again, look, we've seen that in plenty of cases. She's been reviewed by many experts now, and cluster B sociopath ain't the diagnosis. Nope. It's a bipolar two. If you're armchair diagnosing, there's some elements that can look kind of like that. There is. I get how there can be confusion on that, without a doubt. But the actual doctors who have taken the time to look at her did not come back with that conclusion. Yep. So there
and a lot of doctors that. Over a large period of time before the event, right after the event, and 3 years after the event. So a lot have looked at her entire span of time, and that one never came up.
Yeah. So that's that. Let's go and continue the conversation. The Lindsay Clancy conspiracy and confusion episode, as we try to break through so many of the comments that are out there about this case, where it is, where it's going, what's fact, what's fiction. Remember the old show? Remember Fact or Fiction? That was like, it was on like Sunday nights or something.
Right.
It was like truth, fact, truth and the guy's lies. Walking through fog, and it was like stories that you had to determine if they were real or not. It was like Unsolved Mysteries era back, like early 90s or so. It's kind of what it reminds me. We just need a fog machine. That would be great. Okay, the last five here aren't about the night of January 24th. They're about everything around it, what Patrick did before and after, who actually qualified to call her a psychopath, and what the verdict means either way. This is where the most confident comments have the least record behind them, as we're going to go through. And I certainly welcome yours and your thoughts in the comments section as we try to break some of these down.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.